This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Squirrel Friends, the official RuPaul's Drag Race podcast. I'm Alec Mappa. How are you? How about some applause? Applause break? Oh, thank you. Thank you. Listen to that. They're going absolutely crazy. I'm in an ebullient mood today because I have some very good news. First off the docket, the Protection for Marriage Act passed. And so it's really nice. I've been married for 20 years, and every 4 years, my marriage and my family has been up for a vote. So it's kind of a relief to kind of be at this place where we don't have to worry about that. The other bit of good news that I have, I need that shade rattle standing by. Florida State Representative Joseph Harding, the Republican who introduced the Don't Say Gay bill, has been criminally indicted by the Department of Justice for wire fraud, money laundering, and making false statements. That's in Florida, but remember, we're the problem. Okay, you know, he's money laundering, he's doing a wire fraud, he's ripping off his constituents, but drag queens and trans people are the problem. This is what we talk about here on Squirrel Friends, and we have an incredible guest today. Talk about somebody who is newsworthy. She is of the moment. Our guest today was on RuPaul's Drag Race Season 9. She's also an actress, singer, songwriter, activist, and drag icon who is sweet and sassy. I'm head over heels. Did you see what I did there? Head over heels here. Please welcome to the program, my girl Peppermint. Yay!
Well, hello, darling.
We've known each other for so long. I'm holding up a picture of us together on a float.
Oh, my gosh.
I think this is like
early
2006. Look at my abs. Look at your hair.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're on a pride float together with all of these, like, people in their underpants and everything. And I remember, like, at the time I was doing Ugly Betty. But in the time in media, it still felt like as a queer person of color, I had just gotten my foot in the door. And I was like, do you know what I mean? Just kind of like,
absolutely,
just arrived at the party. And then all these years later, you're now a mainstream star. I mean, to kind of have come all of this distance. How does that feel for you?
I mean, mainstream. I don't know whose stream you're talking about.
I know. But you're in mainstream media. I mean, you've been on a Broadway play. You're currently in a television show now. People know you by name. They're asking for you. So take us back to the time that we met on that float. Where were you back then?
Honey, I was working in all the bars and clubs in New York. And the funny thing was, when I originally moved to New York to go to acting school, and that's only because the Philadelphia School of the Arts, which is where I'm from and wanted to go.
Oh, you're a Philly girl.
Didn't accept me. I'm a PA girl. I'm a Philly girl.
Okay.
And they didn't accept me in the school. And so I was like, well, I guess I'll have to go to New York, because I knew. Mm. And my method was very unscientific.
Okay.
I was just looking, when they said go and choose a college, go to the like library at the high school and choose what school you want to go to.
Right.
I was just looking at the brochures. I wasn't even looking in the brochures. I was just looking at the brochures, and these two schools had gay people and queers on the cover.
On the brochure.
And I was like, well, clearly, that's where I want to go, on the brochure. So that's where I applied, and I got into one of them, thankfully, American Musical and Dramatic Academy here in New York.
Yeah.
And so that's why I came to New York. And I remember something my mom used to work at a college that I also couldn't get accepted to. And she used to get free tickets when celebrities and guest speakers would come and speak. And so I was listening to, I think, John Amos, who was the father on Good Times.
Yes. Damn, damn, damn,
And he was talking, and I'll never forget one of the things he said. I don't remember anything else, but I do remember this. There were some actors and theatrical people in the audience, and they were asking questions. And he said, if you are a professional actor when you are doing it for a living, which obviously makes sense.
Yeah.
And so that really resonated with me as a young teenager all these years later. And so when I was working in New York City in the clubs and doing drag every single night of the week for like $50 a night.
Right.
I was like, oh, I made it. I'm paying my rent, barely, but paying my rent as a performer only and not, you know, having to do any of the other stuff.
Perspective.
That folks
do. You didn't have a survival job. This was your job in doing those gigs. Mm-hmm. This is what I talk about every week on the show. Me and Lonnie are really trying to change the culture of the Drag Race fandom because it can be really savage. And what the point we drive home week after week after week after week is that when you see the girls on the show, you're seeing a teeny, teeny part of their journey. You're seeing a culmination. I mean, you're talking years of those gigs that you're talking about, like where you're getting up for $50 a night or sometimes no money at all. What was it like when you first started out? What were some of your experiences? First of all, like, how did it even like happen? Like, okay, I'm doing this. I'm doing drag.
Well, I was at art school and I started doing dabbling in drag here and there back home before moving to New York. As just like a fun thing, as a joke, whatever. And then Halloween hit, and then suddenly it was like every week. Mm-hmm. But when I moved to New York City, obviously New York City nightlife is really popular, and it definitely was in the 90s
when
I moved to New York. And so I was like, you know, let's go out to the club. Of course, in the beginning, I was paying to go to the club. But after a while, I was like, I ain't paying for this. Why don't you let me come here for free?
Right.
And I'll do drag every single week. And I was like working. Like, that was me working, like, just going for free.
Isn't that funny? Like, that's such a New York club thing. It's like, if you're a parade float who goes to the club, eventually it's like, well, pay me, and then everybody can see me for free.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so that's what I ended up doing, and then eventually they put me on to the budget, and I was working with all the girls, and one of my favorite nights working was New Year's Eve. Mm. I'd been working there for several years, but New Year's Eve, 1999, a young man, Marshall Mathers, was working, was performing. He was a guest performer, a.k.a. Eminem.
Yeah.
He was a guest performer. And they had the whole club roped off in some kind of weird way, which they normally didn't do.
Right.
It wasn't because it was Eminem. It was because it was New Year's.
Yes.
And nobody knew who Eminem was. And he was like this guy, this white rapper getting up rapping. You know, he was obviously really good. And he had this huge crew with him. And I was like going to have a little hookup. You know, at the club, which the girls sometimes do.
Yes.
In the secret rooms.
Right.
And so one of the ways.
Those were the days.
Those were the days, darling. All the queens knew all the nooks and crannies in the club where you can go and like have a little privacy, if you know what I mean. And so I went under the stage, which is like, you know, you could go under the stage while Marshall Mathers is performing to have my little hookup. It was a total scandal, darling.
I love this story.
Anyway, that was the beginning. I don't do that anymore.
You were hooking up with somebody underneath Eminem performing. You know, this is a squirrel friend's first. talking about some hidden assignation while Marshall Mathers was performing. Now, listen, I love you as a person, and I think that what was great about this show is we really get to know the people behind the personas and everything. And also, drag queens and trans women have been a part of my life for most of my adult life. Why do you think right now, I know the reason right now, but I want your opinion on why the politicians are doubling down right now on all the transphobia and drag phobia, you know, the demonization of drag queens performing or reading at libraries or trans people existing.
I mean, there's got to be lots of different reasons. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I remember being a young kid hearing Republican politicians always talking about the war on culture, the culture wars, the war on family values and morality, which I think is just a load of BS. And they're really just stuck in the past. But one thing that they are doing, speaking of the past, is they really are regurgitating a lot of their same old tactics, you remember, from the 90s and from the, like, attacking gay folks, not even trans and drag queens and all those folks, but just attacking gay folks. And then before that, attacking people of color just in general, saying the same exact thing, demonizing us, saying that we're immoral, saying that we're sexual predators and things like that. It's just like the same old playbook, just with a new name on it, just with a new cover, just like when I was at the school looking at the brochures.
Right.
And I think unfortunately, right now, what seems to really be striking me as a voter is, you know, because I try my best to be as balanced as possible mm-hmm. and really, like, look at what's actually happening. I didn't hear in the midterms that just passed recently, I didn't hear a lot of the Republican candidates talking about actual policy. Mm. I heard them talking about drag queens, and I heard them talking about trans folks and demonizing individuals and, you know, human beings.
Right.
Instead of actually talking about the policies that they intend on bringing, the things that they're complaining about, because they're complaining about, you know, Joe Biden or the president, and they're complaining about the Democrat policies, but they're saying, you know, we don't like inflation, so let's attack drag queens.
Yeah.
I don't understand. It really is a red herring.
It's a distraction. You know? It's a distraction. The biggest tell was after the shooting in Texas, they introduced the legislation that drag queens were harmful to kids in Texas. And I'm so glad that you said the thing about regurgitating the talking points. This goes all the way back to you know, the 50s and 60s, it was called the Lavender Scare. And they were basically saying that all homosexuals were predators and you had to protect your kids from them. In the 70s, when I grew up, Anita Bryant was saying that in Florida, again, Florida, trying to pass the legislation to bar queer people from teaching, from holding any position, saying queer people have no business being in our schools. And they tried to pass it in California with the Briggs Initiative. It was featured in the movie The Life and Times of Harvey Milk. And it's the same thing over and over again. This distraction that we're somehow the problem. And then, like, in the news, it always comes out that they're always up to some bullshit. That any kind of, like, accusation is... they're always accusing us of something that they're already doing. Do you know what I mean? It's like, if you...
Yeah.
And then this is how animated I am right now. Columbus, Ohio, the Proud Boys marched in with guns and masks. That's the new thing, because they're...
Now they want to wear masks.
Yeah,
now they want to wear masks.
Now you want to wear masks, so we can't see you. And to me, that's like, own it. Let me see your face. If you're going to preach this rhetoric, let me see your face. So they were marching en masse, armed, to shut down a drag queen library reading, to shut down a queen reading to some kids. And to me, that's just, it's the height of, like, if you really want to, like, shut down predators, protest a church. go to a Catholic church.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's shocking to me. I mean, the only thing that's more shocking to me, I saw actually right before I visited you here at the podcast, I was looking at something on social media online somewhere, and somebody I follow, who's progressive and posts a lot of different things, posted a screen capture of a website where you could go and sign up and register and report the drag shows. And it's like, report drag shows here. If you know of any, let us know where and when.
God.
Give us the details and information. And so they're obviously putting this resource out there for people to, you know, utilize it and report all the
Meanwhile,
drag shows.
Like, for years, you've been doing these shows at like 3 o'clock in the morning or in some club somewhere. And like, nobody's had a problem with it until now.
Had a problem with it. And I don't know, because I don't do a lot of drag queen story hour, but this is not like the drag queens are reading, you know, like erotica to the kids. They're going in and reading Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
It's ridiculous.
But the only thing that scares me more than these politicians that are like spewing this rhetoric is the fact that there are people, I would like to think nice people who are somewhat reasonable, but not in this instance, who are actually buying into this.
Yes.
And using that to influence their vote and actually going to the website and reporting the shows and supporting that.
I know. You know. And Alani and I were talking about how you can draw a direct line from all the anti-queer rhetoric to the shooting in Colorado Springs. It's kind of like you inflame
very much
crazy people. And it's just, I don't know. I'm just wondering. But see, the thing is, like, the fact that the Preservation of Marriage Act passed means that we're not as scary to some people anymore. And what happens with queer issues is when you demonize us, we come out even more in the media. We become even more vocal in the media. So it's like you get used to us. And then we become less scary, because then it's kind of like the thing in your mind is always scarier than the actual thing, the actual reality.
Yeah, because you don't actually know the only way that you can demonize folks is if you lie about who we are and you limit people from being able to be exposed to us. But we're everywhere now, and we're so much more visible. And now that people are aware, 70% of Americans support marriage equality and same-sex marriage. And I'm shocked that I was reassured that there were 39 House Republicans and I think 16 Republican senators who supported, and obviously all of the Democrats supported the...
Yeah, Mitch McConnell did not support it, voted against it, and he's in an interracial marriage. So whatever. Listen, I have so much to talk to you about, but we have to take a quick break, which we'll do, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
In the 1980s and 90s, New York City needed a tough cop like Detective Louis Scarsella.
Putting bad guys away,
there's no feeling like it in the world.
He was the guy who made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
That's one version.
This guy is a piece of shit.
Derek Hamilton was put away for murder by Detective Scarsella.
In prison, Derek turned himself into the best jailhouse lawyer of his generation.
And the law was my girlfriend. This is my only way to freedom.
Derek and other convicted murderers
started a law firm behind bars.
We never knew we had the same cop in the case.
Scarsella.
We got to show that he's a corrupt cop.
They can go f*** themselves.
I'm Steve Fishman.
And I'm Dax Devlin Ross. And this is The Burden.
Listen to new episodes of The Burden on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear episodes 1 week early and ad-free with exclusive bonus content, subscribe to True Crime Clubhouse on Apple Podcasts.
And we're back. So I want to know your take on this. As I did the first trans dating show with Calpurnia Adams for Logo.
I remember, and I want to talk off the record, about that later on. Okay.
So that was around 2007. And then shortly thereafter, I would say, I remember it was in 2012, Orange is the New Black starts coming out, and Laverne Cox is more visible, and then she's on the cover of Time magazine. As a trans person in the world, did you feel the shift in media coverage and perception quickly or gradually?
I mean, is it a cop-out to say both?
Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
I remember, like in a macro way, even before these representation, which we can go back and look, and some things are problematic. Every time you go back and look at something 10 or 20 years old, you can say, oh, we might have done it differently. Mm-hmm. But these were images and stories that were being put out by ourselves. Whereas in the past, before that, it was other people talking about us and putting out our stories for us.
And their version of the story.
And I really do remember feeling so depressed when I was sort of coming into my own, thinking about myself as a trans person, and then watching Jerry Springer, which were really like, if you wanted to see a trans person on TV, that's where you would have to go to see it.
Right. Or the famous Maury Povich, That's a Man, Maury, segments.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so having those two shows where, like, the audience was screaming, man, 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 at a trans woman, or where, like, a trans woman on Jerry Springer would, like, profess her love to her boyfriend or somebody, and then they would get up and, like, hit her, literally smack her upside the head with a chair.
Right.
You know, I was like, this is depressing. Mm-hmm. And seeing the dating show that you did, or seeing, obviously, Laverne Cox and these little glimpses every few years in the 2000s was definitely a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
And I remember the moment that I think really changed it, and I don't know if we give it enough credit, Although, if we watch the movie Disclosure, which I urge everyone to do. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty great.
Then you'll see it. When Laverne Cox and Carmen Carrera were both on Katie Couric's talk show.
Yes!
And Katie so famously asked Carmen about which genital surgeries she had had and what was going on. And they both put the kibosh on that. And they were like, you know what? No, you can't ask us about this anymore. And this was something Barbara Walters has asked about genital surgery.
Right,
Oprah Winfrey has asked about genital surgery.
Yeah, it's like you were objectified to the point where I can ask you anything because it's like talking to a toaster. You're not like a person with dignity that is worthy of respect.
You're not a human with dignity.
Yeah, yeah. It's so crazy.
And so Laverne and Carmen objected to it and she kind of started the ball.
Right.
And then Laverne said so famously to Katie Couric, if you ask us about our surgeries and that's what you're bringing us on here to do or our genitalia, then you're not actually asking us about our lived experiences, what it is that we're going through. And you're not, you're just unaware of those things. And Katie, obviously that resonated with her enough to bring the girls back on and really do it the right way the next time she had them on the show. And she even did a series that was all about trans folks and gender nonconforming folks in America today. This was back in 2012, 2013, something like that. And it was a great series. And so it showed that she learned. And then since then, I kid you not, I really do think that was a seminal moment because I don't think I've heard a reputable journalist or news organization ask those types of questions.
Right, because you just kind of learn what was appropriate or inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And there's those watershed moments. It's kind of like after Pose, the excuse was always, we don't have the talent. I wanted to cast a trans person, but we didn't have the talent. And so, like, Jeffrey Tambor is going to be the last person, the last cisgender person to play a trans person in major media. So this generation of, you know, because my kid is now 17 going on 18, this generation is really redefining what gender is and what gender means and what their place is in it. And certainly RuPaul's Drag Race has played a huge part in that. Let's redirect the conversation towards your experience, towards RuPaul. So you're performing in the New York clubs. You must have known a lot of the girls before they were on the show.
Every single one of them.
And they must have come back to you with their experience. Yeah.
They did. I mean, honestly, you know, I didn't really have...
All the New York girls.
I knew the New York girls, of course, before going on the show. The funny thing was, which probably still happens, of course, definitely still happens, once you were on that show, honey, you were gone. And so I didn't have a chance to sit and talk to you after doing the show with most of the, many of the girls.
Yeah. Because they'd already hit the road.
They'd hit the road and they'd be on tour and they'd do their thing. And then the next group of girls would go. And so it was moving very fast if you were in the New York club scene.
Right.
And it would feel like, you know, today you're sitting around complaining about why everybody's on Drag Race. And then tomorrow we're all on the show.
Right.
And so I guess it's my turn.
Yeah.
And I remember, I mean, I definitely remember season one. One of the people doing casting was just straight up going around, I'm sure, to all the drag shows, definitely came to mind, and just asked me, do you want to be on a new reality show with RuPaul? You know, you could just go on. And of course, this was before the show had ever premiered.
Right,
so
right.
I was like, honey, I don't want to go on some, what kind of Jerry Springer thing are you trying to trap me
on? Oh, exactly.
No. Because we hadn't seen anything like that before. And so I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, years later, I decided to go on, 9 years later.
How many times did you submit?
I submitted three times, times a charm. The first was season 7, season 8, and then finally season 9.
And where were you when you heard the news that you were going to be on?
Honey, I was sitting at home gossiping. And I've said this once or twice before, but I never said who it was. I was on the phone with my good girlfriend. And, you know, we curse at each other as a term of endearment, as you know.
Yeah, hey, bitch.
And so I'm like, bitch, what's up, bitch? And so I was on the phone with my girlfriend, and then we kind of got disconnected, and the phone rang, and I have a landline, so I didn't even, like, look who it was.
Right, right.
And so I picked up the phone, bitch, what is a bitch? And it was the person that was calling was one of the producers from Drag Race, like, we'd like to put you on the show. And I was like, oh my God. But the girlfriend that I was talking to was the fabulous actress who just starred in a brilliant film called Monica. Her name is Trace Lissette. And we were on the phone gossiping and gabbing and all that stuff. And so she was the person I was on the phone with when they called to tell me I was on the show.
Oh, you killed on the show on season 9. I mean, it was you're definitely a standout. out. You made it to the season finale. How do you feel about your representation on the show? Because some people come on afterwards and go, oh, I don't know. I had gotten to one argument and they turned it into the whole season. What was your experience?
I mean, I think I've witnessed what that looks like, it like kind of feels like, because I was certainly afraid of that. And I think I might have told you this before, but I was watching this TV show when I was auditioning and preparing. Mm-hmm. I was packing my bags, which was like the week before going, I was packing my bags. And I was watching, I binged watch the show Unreal.
Unreal,
which
yeah.
Which is a reality TV show about like The Bachelor.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was some manipulative and so conniving. Mm-hmm. And I psyched myself into thinking, that's what they're going to do.
That's what they're going to do to me. They're fucking with me.
They're going to do to me.
Yeah.
And so anyway, but I was like in a weird headspace when I went. And so I was relieved when it was very straightforward. Mm-hmm. In watching it back, that everything pretty much was straightforward, but nothing felt overly contrived to me.
Uh-huh.
And I was happy with how I came off on the show. In fact, I was extra worried, not because, like, am I going to look like a bitch or not? Mm-hmm. I wasn't even focused on that. I was really thinking, okay, I'm going on the show as out and trans, and I'm going to have these conversations. And again, I was on the phone with my girl, Trace
Lissette. Right, right.
And she was like, girl, I was like, should I talk about it on the show? Should I not? How should I? She's like, girl, you are who you are. Go in there and you say who you are. And if they have a problem with it, fuck them.
Yeah, you
and
did.
And so that was my mission accomplished. Yeah. And so then when I was watching it back, I actually felt good, not only about how I was portrayed, but then how I tried my best to represent the community and trans queens, you know, well.
It's a big responsibility. Now, you weren't the first trans woman on the show, but I think, were you the first contestant who was out from the beginning? Because Kylie came out later on at a reunion show. I believe Carmen came out after the show, right? Or were they out as trans women during the show while they were competing?
I don't really know everyone's experience. Yeah. And some of the girls didn't like talked about, you know, when you talk about it versus when it actually happens in your life is sometimes two different things.
Yeah.
I think one of the two most sort of emotional coming out moments of the earlier seasons were, of course, Kylie Sonique Love,
right.
who announced during her, and it was a very emotional moment.
So emotional.
During her reunion.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
And then Monica Beverly Hills, who announced during the season on the runway.
Right.
And then got eliminated the next episode.
Right.
I was out, you know, out as trans. I came out in 2012.
Okay.
Just to everyone I knew. Of course, I wasn't on national TV.
Yeah.
I wasn't famous.
But you were already living your life as an openly trans person.
But I was already living my, And my first time ever doing national television, like unscripted national television, was The Daily Show, when the same year Trevor Noah took over,
oh.
or the year after Trevor Noah took over in 2016. And I had the chance to talk about being out and being trans it was April, I think, 18th, 2016. Folks who are looking for the receipts can go back and look at the receipts. Clearly, that's before Drag Race.
Yeah.
And that's me talking about trans politics and trying to help the community and being out as a trans woman. And I was on there with Laith Ashley and Jocelyn DeFries and a whole bunch of other really fabulous trans folks talking about the trans panic bill, the bathroom bill that was in North Carolina that was introduced in 2016.
See, they're all these fear-based bills, you know? It's kind of like any civil rights fight always has a fight about the bathroom. Having to share the bathroom or a swimming pool with a black person.
They do.
Or a trans person. It's always about the bathroom. Okay, on a lighter note, I want to fangirl a little bit and talk about your Drag Race journey, your memorable moments. The one that stands out to me and everybody, I'm such a fan. I watch on YouTube videos of lip syncs that I think are legendary.
I mean, me too, darling.
And I love. And the one with you and Cynthia Lee Fontaine. Music with you in the pink Madonna thing.
Oh my God. That whole episode.
Yeah, you shot her with an invisible sawed-off shotgun.
I shot her.
Did you have that planned in advance?
I mean, no, I didn't have it planned. However, I mean, it was a combination of me thinking fast on my feet.
Yeah.
And then also thinking like minutes before going on to, you know, because I knew I was going to, you know, they tell you you're going to lip sync and then you stand there for what feels like an hour waiting for them to adjust the lights and prepare. And so during that time, I was like, okay, what can I do? How am I going to use the stage? Oh, my dress. Is my dress going to, what am I going to do? Like, you know, because I had to think about what am I going to do with my jewelry? Is my hair going to fly off? What's going to happen? And so I ran down that sort of list in my head about like, okay, you're gonna have to hike up your dress because my dress was like long and my legs were like in a pencil skirt.
Yeah,
so I couldn't do anything. So I had to like literally hike my dress up around my booty to dance. I was like, whatever.
You did the typewriter. So you did the MC Hammer typewriter. So when you shot her, I was like, well, she's gonna win. And then, but also when you did that typewriter dance and I saw Ru lose it to that, I was like, she's got it. So meeting Gaga, that was your season as well, right? You were the Gaga season. Was that a gag and a half?
Darling. That was a Gaga, Gagalisha, Gaga, Laga, Laga. Uh-huh. We did not know. And we were, of course, we had no idea how many girls that were going to be on the season. So when the 14th girl comes in, we're like, oh, here she is. And the first thing everybody thought was, who is this tiny, like, Gaga is short.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were like, who is this tiny motherfucking bitch coming into this thing with all these fabulous costumes and looking so fierce? And I was like, hey, that kind of looks like Gaga. And then when she spoke, it was like, first we thought it was like, is Derek Barry coming like to do a Gaga thing?
Right.
Like, that's what I thought. And then when she spoke, I was like, oh, that's Gaga. That is amazing. None other than Gaga. And we gagged.
Yeah.
And Gaga, they do it now a lot on the seasons, but they obviously have had celebrities on the show before. But I think that was one of the first major celebrities who, from what I can remember,
visited Untucked.
Who visited Untucked. Yeah. And that was not, they were like, we gotta go. We have to go. And they were like, we have to roll. And Gaga was like, no, I'm going back there and I wanna talk to these girls. And not only did she go back there to say, you know, believe in yourself or these like platitudinal like speeches that they do these days, she came back there with notes.
I remember. Yeah.
She came back there with positive notes and also some constructive criticism for every single girl.
I love it.
And she had things written, pages written. She gave some earrings to something. Like, it was like a whole experience. And so that was a gift.
Yes, that was Mother Monster. And you were a drag Mother Monster yourself that season. You gave birth to the fabulous Wintergreen, who has her own universe now. You kind of just set her out into the wild.
Yes, she does. And her own fan base, darling.
It's crazy. Yeah.
That is a sassy queen, I'll tell you.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen Sarge when I've gone back to the show. Sarge is still there working as a cameraman. Mm-hmm. I just absolutely love it. Okay, before we go to the break, one of my favorite outfits of yours was the Dominatrix outfit that you wore in your season when you came out. And you went just queen to queen. You had this look in your eye. I remember turning to my husband going, she's done this before. You looked very experienced. On that note, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to Peppermint all about her post-drag race life because it is so rich, so full. She's doing a million things, and we're going to talk about all of it after these messages.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
In the 1980s and 90s, New York City needed a tough cop like Detective Louis Scarcella.
Putting bad guys away.
There's no feeling like it in the world.
He was the guy who made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
That's one version.
This guy is a piece of shit.
Derek Hamilton was put away for murder by Detective Scarcella.
In prison, Derek turned himself into the best jailhouse lawyer of his generation.
And the law was my girlfriend. This is my only way to freedom.
Derek and other convicted murderers
started a law firm behind bars.
We never knew we had the same cop in the case.
Scarcella.
We gotta show that he's a corrupt cop.
They can go f*** themselves.
I'm Steve Fishman.
And I'm Dax Devlin Ross. And this is The Burden.
Listen to new episodes of The Burden on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear episodes 1 week early and ad-free with exclusive bonus content, subscribe to True Crime Clubhouse on Apple Podcasts.
And we're back. Would you do All-Stars if they ask you to do it?
100%.
Okay.
And I have to be honest, they did ask me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to say no, I was unable to do it, but it was strictly a scheduling thing. I
know okay.
Some people might think, oh, she doesn't want to do it or whatever. It was just a scheduling thing. I was literally getting ready to premiere on Broadway.
Right.
It was the opening week, and that was June of 2018.
You did the Head Over Heels Go-Go's musical on Broadway.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that's when they were filming season 4, I believe,
wow,
of All Stars. And I was not able to do it.
And you were one of the first out trans people in a role on Broadway. Am I correct? In a musical?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I like to give credit where credit's due. Mm-hmm. We never know who was out.
You never know.
Or who,
yeah,
you know, we never know.
Who was trans.
Who was trans. But as far as being out, mm-hmm, and associated with the show, the official title is the first trans woman to originate a principal role, like a starring role, in a Broadway musical.
Fabulous.
So we kind of have to be that specific,
okay,
in order for
listen,
to leave room.
I was the very first gay Asian series regular on network television. So those distinctions, you gotta grab them while you can. So post Drag Race, you've been so busy. You have a show right now, Call Me Mother. Can you tell us a little bit
about
that?
Call Me Mother. It kind of picks up, continues the imagination where RuPaul's Drag Race kind of opened the door to. And it's obviously a drag reality competition show. It's mm-hmm produced in Canada.
Oh.
So many of the contestants are Canadian. And it's similar in that it's a drag reality competition mm-hmm show. But basically the theme is three drag mothers. I'm a drag mother mm-hmm of a house. Three drag houses with competitors and one winner. And so at the end of each episode, the house that scores the lowest or is in the bottom, mm, that mother has to decide which of her drag children to send home.
Oh, my God. It's like Sophie's Choice. You have to give up
really
one of your kids at the end of this show.
It really is. It really is. I'm loving the 70s, 80s movie references. Very much so.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's a wonderful time. I'm on there with a couple of fabulous queens.
Right.
A legendary queen named Barbada. Mm. And from RuPaul's Drag Race UK, Crystal. And so we are the three house mothers on there. I'm the mother of the House of Dulcette, which basically means candy mm in French and Italian,
yes,
and all the foreign tongues. And so that's what it is. And I am very proud to say that my house had the winner of the season 1, who is a drag artist named Toddy. One of my favorite things about the show, though, in addition to it being drag entertainers, it's any kind of drag entertainer.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Drag kings, drag queens, non-binary,
right,
monarchs.
It's open to everybody.
Whoever. It's open to everybody. And so someone, a non-binary performer, Toddy, who is my drag child, was season 1 winner, which means I won Mother of the Year.
Aww.
And then, so now we're in season 2 right now, and we're coming up on the finale next week.
Can you tell all the Squirrel Friends really quickly what platform that's streaming on again?
Yeah, it's streaming on Out TV.
Okay.
You can just go to your streaming device and then just download it, or you can go to outtv.com and just watch it on
fabulous
the website.
Now, you just finished a tour with the fabulous Jujubee, who I get mistaken for all the time when I land in a town.
Honestly,
like, yeah, I was,
out of drag, yeah, for sure.
I always say, like, you know, this town, Chicago, you really know how to treat a celebrity. As soon as I got off the plane, people were yelling, Jujubee, Jujubee, we love you. So you flew the lovely skies with airline Amaranth. Which is Jujubee's real name.
I sure did.
How many cities did you do and what kind of show was it?
It was a 10-city tour. And Jujubee, we both obviously love the art form of drag.
Mm-hmm.
And we love drag performances. We've done many, many shows for many years, doing clubs, doing the dance music. We have original music out that we've
fabulous
done. I've had songs about my titties and songs about this and that. But I really wanted to, you know, my true love and one of my biggest passions and dreams was always to be able to perform live music with a band.
Fabulous.
Original music with a band. And do R&B music. And Juju, we got to talking, and Juju had the same feeling. And so we, after a late night of being up too late on the phone, we came up with this idea to tour the country with a band, which is very expensive.
And
go around from city to city and perform our original R&B music. And we both have a passion for R&B. And, you know, I think I remember being in New York City and going down to some of the R&B clubs in New York or jazz clubs. And there was one across the street from my house until recently it closed. And hearing live music where there's nothing electronic. And then it's just a guitar player and an upright bass player and some drums and a singer and a whatever and a piano. And they make the most beautiful music.
Yeah.
That's something that people, frankly, our age, I'm sorry, Alec, take for granted.
We're forgetting about it.
I think people who are 20 years old or maybe even now 21, live music is gone for them. It's not accessible.
Yeah.
So we wanted to bring that back for people.
I went to the opera last night to see this new soprano. Mm. Her name is Angel Blue. She was a student at UCLA, and she was a contestant in the Miss America pageant. And now she's this international opera star. And just to sit in a theater and hear live voices and music again was just mind-blowing after being locked up in the pandemic for so long. I want to talk to you forever and ever because you're like my best friend in high school, and we would get busted together for doing bad things. But I have to ask you real quick, what's next? What's happening next for you? You said you're rehearsing something.
Yeah, I'm rehearsing something, a bunch of things. I had a really great year, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So in addition to season two of Call Me Mother, which is out now, people can watch, I just wrapped filming two TV shows. One is season two of Harlem, which comes out next month or in January.
Yes.
Yeah. Harlem, it's on Amazon.
That's an Yvette Lee Bowser show.
Yeah. And it's starring Megan Good. It's a fantastic show. People should check it out. So I'm recurring on there.
You'll watch that.
And then I also wrapped the first season of a show that was written and produced and created by Michelle Buteau called Survival of the Thickest, based on her best-selling book. And that's a half-hour comedy. It's on Netflix. And I have a recurring role on that as well. And so just did that. I'm really excited. And I'm in rehearsals for Coming to Los Angeles, which I never do.
Right.
To perform at the Mark Taper Theater, Transparent the Musical.
Yes, yes. I will see you there. I'm definitely going. I'm at the Taper all the time. I adore you. You're so talented. And everything that you have right now, this moment for you, is earned. You earned it. You put in the hours. You did the work. And I love the way you kind of present yourself is so unapologetic and so matter of fact, but it's done so lovingly. Do you know what I mean? It's like your whole vibe is not confrontational. You're kind of like, when you said to me that you had come out in 2012, I was like, she's had all this time to kind of, you know, like the Beyonce song, she's comfy, she's cozy in her skin. Goddamn, she loves herself. So I adore you. Where can all our squirrel friends find you on social media?
They can hit me up at Peppermint247. Just Peppermint247 on everything. Twitter, on all socials.
Okay.
I might cancel my Twitter soon after all.
Yeah, I canceled my Twitter too. I couldn't take it anymore. Yeah. One last question. Yeah. Is it fashion?
Allegedly.
Is it fashion? Allegedly. Well, goodbye, Peppermint. It's so good seeing you, and I'll see you when you come to LA. All right? I won't miss
it. See you there.
I love you.
Love you too.
All right. Bye. You can find me if you want to leave us a message on the show about if you're loving it. Message me on Instagram at Alec Mappa. You can talk to our co-host Lonnie Love. You can DM her at Comic Lonnie Love on Instagram and at Lonnie Love on the Twitter. Show the girls love on social media. I'm telling you, we had Peppermint on today. You've heard her journey. That's similar to a lot of other girls' journey. Just show them respect, show them love on all media. And DM me anytime you like. Now, remember, you can listen to Squirrel Friends, the official RuPaul's Drag Race podcast, on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like this episode, make sure to rate and review us 5 stars. please, and tell a friend. You can catch up on past episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race and All Stars on Paramount Plus. I love you. We love you here at Squirrel Friends. This is a safe space for all the Squirrel Friends and for anybody who chimes in to listen. We love you, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
In the 90s, New York detective Louis Scarcella locked up the worst criminals.
Putting bad guys away. There's no feeling like it.
Then jailhouse lawyers took aim, led by Derek Hamilton.
Scarcella took me to the precinct and lied.
20 men eventually walked free. Now, in the Burden podcast, after a decade of silence, Louis Scarcella finally tells his story, and so does Derek Hamilton. Listen to The Burden on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.